So now I'm standing here with a very interesting gentleman who tells me he's 77 years old and he looks a lot younger, who has actually met Gandhi. So welcome to the program. What's your name?
Kumar Raj Singh.
Now tell me a little bit about your own background, because you're also an author as well. What book are you bringing out?
I have written reports for the United Nations for whom I was working before as an advisor on tourist development for member countries, especially African countries and Caribbean islands, plus numerous other reports for different organizations. The British Commonwealth Secretary, call it British to make it clear, when you compare it with other Commonwealths like Soviets or Australian Commonwealth. And before that, I was in India as a director of tourism. I came to Australia some 18 years ago and loved this place and felt it, even today, I feel it's the best place in the world
to live.
Why do you say that?
People are relaxed, not tense compared to any other society. There is a lot of talk here about racism, but I find racism is comparatively much less, if at all, here than in most other countries of the world. Not only Western countries, but even other countries. I would not single out, because that can be very controversial sometimes, people from those countries.
So why do you think Australians aren't particularly racist?
Racists, Australians, I don't think, neither in law nor much in practice, except that different ethnic cultural groups under the system, which is something like Canada, live the life which is patterned after a mosaic rather than a melting pot. And in a mosaic, it is almost inevitable that there will be groups which will continue to cling for some time at least to their past culture from which they have come. But that does not make it racism for me. It becomes racism when you discriminate against other people, you hate them, and you try to glorify only yourself at the cost of others.
So perhaps there's a bit of power there, where you're trying to feel more powerful over somebody else by saying something that makes that person feel less than you. Do you think that?
Yes, you have put it rightly. I think so. I think I can agree with that.
Tell me a little bit about, that sort of leads me to politics actually, that idea. Now you've been in politics yourself. Can you talk a little bit about your background in politics?
Oh goodness. When I came to Australia, I was teaching political science and international affairs in the first Institute of Technology in India, started by the Government of India, the Indian Institute of Technology. It has 8 institutes spread over different parts of the country, and it's modeled after the MIT in the United States. I was teaching international affairs. My bachelor's degree included history and political science. My master's was in diplomacy and international affairs. And law, I was a qualified lawyer in India before I joined the government of India and became the director of tourism. So political science has been a very interesting subject for me anywhere in the world. Constitutional law, I came and studied in Australia also in the Melbourne University. Some subjects of law. So when I came here, inevitably I was comparing what was happening to the political system in Australia and trying to learn and find out. And I found that firstly, it was very confusing, because the names Liberal Party, National Party and Labour Party, later slowly I found out, were misnomers.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Liberal Party was hardly liberal, it was a conservative party. The National Party was more a party of the villages and the rural area rather than a real National Party. The Labour Party, I thought, was patterned after the British Labour Party or Labour parties in other countries, which are leftist, which look after the common man. But slowly I came to learn that the Labour Party in Australia is slightly different, which is almost completely, if not monopolized, largely influenced by the unions. And that makes a big difference. When I was invited by a newly formed political party called the Unity Party to contest the election, I was very reluctant, because I didn't want to enter active politics. I'm completely an apolitical man, more a student rather than a practitioner. For various reasons. One of the reasons is that politics in Australia is generally considered to be a game, a profession. where you use media to glorify yourself or your group. As yesterday Latham pointed out in his forceful talk, okay, at the Melbourne Uni. But my own tradition of politics was that you lead society by giving example, by character. And you are in politics for a cause, not for yourself, not to become a prime minister, not to become a minister, or not to gain a particular advantage. So the tradition in my life of politics was of Gandhi and Nehru, who went to jail, who were totally nonviolent, who taught me to stand for a cause, work for a cause. One of the phrases that Nehru used in his book, in the book written by Alan Campbell Johnson, Mission with Mountbatten, was that we are little men working for a great cause. And if the cause is great, something of greatness falls upon us too. We are not great, we are nobody, actually. It is the cause which makes us big or small or great. So if you simply say, I'm here for myself for a job, like one person, I would not name him, he lost the election twice, and he said, here I'm asking for a job from you. This is totally, completely different from what I was trained to hear from leaders of a nation who would never say, I want a job from you. They say, what can I do for you? How can I serve your interests? This is the way I think we should go ahead. Please guide me and tell me. Mm-hmm. I'm for you. I suffered for you. Your suffering is my suffering. That is what Gandhi said. I'm finding it totally missing in Australian political life or even social life. Everybody seems to be for himself. But in a way, it's better than America, where I have been many times. I've studied American history, culture, constitution, geography, political systems, where individualism, along with capitalism, has taken its very high stride. And it is the media which almost rules the whole of American society and thinking today. Very few people, even intellectuals, are left to think for themselves freely. We are all conditioned in a way in life, but we get more conditioned than the media is bombarding your mind all the time with certain messages which are not necessarily healthy for the whole human society. They can be healthy and in the interest of certain groups only. So therefore, this was something lacking here. But anyway, because when I was asked, I said, I'll stand for the election. Okay. I knew I will not win. My Freemason friends told me, you will not win. Many of my friends told me, you will not win. The Indian community, because they know of my Indian background, they say, oh, well, an Indian can never win or he will never yet get even votes. I said, listen, as I said in my election appeal in the paper, in the articles which are published in the Leader Press and other places, I said, Tagore and Gandhi taught, even if you are alone, one person, start walking. It is a message to gather people around you. It is not you, it is your message. So I started walking. They gave me the constituency, that is the division of Holt. One morning I went to Dandenong, talked to a few persons, men and women, and I found the crowd started growing. That was a great experience for me. The crowd started growing, I started walking, they became bigger and bigger, became a procession. Mm-hmm. That was very encouraging. And what happened? I'd never begged of the Indian community to help me in the election, nor for money or anything. Who were the people who were helping me? Oh, the Polish, Hungarian, Chinese, Poles, Indians, Chinese, all nationalities, Irish, French, and my Freemason brothers, and the Sri Lankans. It was very encouraging. I could not win, I did not win, and I have no regrets.
Can you just point out the reason why you were running with the Unity Party? What was your major goal?
To oppose Pauline Hanson's party, One Nation, which in my opinion was poisoning Australian society and taking it backwards by recycling racism, which was almost dead. Mm. When I came here, I felt this country was much better than England, much better than America, much better than most other countries in the world, even from the point of racism. Mm. It's truly multicultural, where you can all kinds of, but if somebody tries to take it backwards, it's damaging Australia. I opposed it, and that's why because they asked me to carry out this message onwards, I stood for the election.
It's interesting you use the word message, because I remember Gandhi said that his life is his message. Now, you're one of the very few people I would imagine alive today who's actually remembered Gandhi. You actually saw him. Now, can you just recount that experience and how old you were when you met with Gandhi? Yes. And if you could describe a little bit about him and his presence.
Okay. 1946 and 1947, I was studying in Dehradun, DAV College, Dehradun, intermediate level, that's just below graduate level. And at one time, I was the president of the Students' Union also. I met most of the leaders of India at that time, was a worker of the Students' Congress, and I was a follower of Gandhi. Because I walked in 1942, Movement for the Freedom of India, as a student.
So you were walking with Gandhi in his long march?
Not exactly at that time, but I walked with him later. He came to my hometown, Mussoorie, in the Himalayas, and the place was called Silverton, which is a valley surrounded by beautiful mountains and trees. He used to hold his prayer meetings there. Gandhi always used to hold prayer meetings in the evening, which were attended by record crowds. And he was a great inspiration. And I knew most of the leaders. I had met them, Nehru, Maulana Azad, Rajendra Prasad, Vallabhai Patel, all of them. So I went to his meetings. And because I was a young, rather good-looking and impressive sort of student leader, everywhere I got a seat. So what happened when I went to the hall, to the meeting? There were thousands and thousands of people there. So I walked straight to the rostrum where Gandhi was sitting. Two or four girls all used to walk with him. One was Rajkumari Amrit Kaur, the princess from Kapurthala, who became the health minister later. Other was Sushila Nair. He used to walk with both of them on either side, like this. And Mahabir Tyagi, who became defense minister, nobody was a minister at that time. They were all workers. So when I went there, they invited me, and I sat with Gandhi and heard him. His voice came out of his heart.
I can see you've got tears in your eyes, which means you really felt it.
It inspired you.
Yeah.
It moved you. It shook you. And you felt like opening your heart before him. He was a man, totally guileless, who had his pragya, his intelligence, his judgment, totally influenced by any kind of we call it vikar in Hindi or Sanskrit, that is pollution. A very pure heart, in tune with God, completely in tune with God. He believed in God, and I have believed in God along as an inspiration. Whether there is a God or not is a debatable question, but if you believe in God, it will make you very strong. It will give an inspiration in life. You will never feel at any time dejected or depression. That is a illness of Western society today. So I spent some moments with Gandhi, walked with him, sat with him, heard his voices. But if you ask me what happened, in 1947, when India became free, I was in the place where I was born was Saharanpur. I was a follower of Gandhi. I used to see him in my visions. I was sleeping in my room. And about 4 o'clock, I saw a dream that somebody had shot Mahatma Gandhi. I woke up, and my younger brother was sleeping with me, who was opposed to me in politics. He belonged to the Hindu RSS organization. So I told him, but he loved Gandhi also. He said, no, it can't happen. I said, I started grinding stock for the whole one day. My mother and father consoled me.
I can see you're still feeling that. And so that was that a year before?
No.
How far?
A week before.
A week before.
It was premonition. It was clairvoyance. I am a little bit of a clairvoyant. I can see things.
Yeah.
Since then, I found slowly, I tested in the tube. So after a week, I found he was really shot dead. And then the news was announced of Gandhi's death. I came out of my house into the street, and I found the whole city was empty. Muslims, Christians, Hindus, Sikhs, men, women, all walking.
Sounds
with tears
incredible.
In their eyes.
It must have been an incredible time.
Oh, unforgettable. There are many unforgettable moments in life that I will put in my book now, which is full of all such events all over the world where I have been. But that was the day when Gandhi ended, and it hurt me tremendously. Since you asked me about Gandhi specifically, that's what I can tell you.
And I think, too, what that highlights is what we were saying in contrast to the politics here in Australia, where Ethan Latham was really indicating there was no heart and that you couldn't trust people. And what you've described is more of what a leader really is, not just a person who's an elected person pursuing a career, but actually a leader who has heart and is of service to the community. Perhaps this is what we're now seeking here in Australia, is this shift in the way that we are here to lead.
Let me comment on what our friend Mark Latham, I was invited by the VC's office event there yesterday. I like his forceful personality. My reaction in two words would be, my training is, this world is full of vices, this world is full of Satan, this world is full of difficulties, this world is full of dishonest people. But should you run away from it? Should you quit a party? Now, at one time, there was a politician in India, a leader in India, Jayaprakash Narayana. He said, I'm quitting politics forever. Ashwar Kalpani said, you are a coward. Politics is a means to change society. How can you run away from it? A brave man never runs away. He fights.
And of course,
losing an election is no problem for me, for Mark Latham. But I'm sorry, with due respect, whatever that man may be, brilliant, brilliant mind I found him yesterday. But quitting the Labour Party midway, leaving politics totally, he can say, yes, I have to devote my time to my family. But my training is your cause, your mission comes first, in which my family had joined me, in which Gandhi's family also always supported me. My wife supported me always, my whole family supported, including my parents, in my mission. And I believe, I live for a mission. Every day I find there's a cause for which I exist and I live. Mm. I don't live just for the sake of fun on playing cards and wasting time. There's only one life given to you. Every day is precious, which is passing. People forget this every day. They don't know it will never come back. Use it properly for yourself, good and good for society and everybody. It will never come back. And don't be a coward to run away from politics. Use it for betterment of society. Mm-hmm. That's my view.
I think that is a fantastic thing to finish on and a very inspiring thought. So thank you so much for your time. It's been a real privilege to meet you. Thank you.
Thank you, dear.